that situation will be worked out. But we've got a big job ahead. It's up to you and I to make sure it gets done. Hey, thanks for listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left...
News from QNN is next. This is the Quality News Network. Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said his country's nuclear program is nearly completed and Iran would soon celebrate. He also claimed the international community is caving to Tehran's nuclear demands. The International Atomic Energy Agency has found traces of highly enriched uranium waste and unexplained plutonium in Iran. The IAEA report confirms that the country continues to enrich uranium in defiance of the United Nations Security Council. Up to 130 people, mostly educators, were kidnapped from a government research institute in Baghdad by armed men wearing police uniforms today. Five senior Iraqi police officers are implicated in the kidnapping and face discipline charges. Elsewhere in Iraq, at least 82 people were found killed or dead. British Prime Minister Tony Blair spoke with members of the Iraq Study Group today via video link. The bipartisan group met with President Bush yesterday to discuss how to deal with the situation in Iraq. In Gaza, Hamas indicated the new Palestinian unity government would not recognize Israel's right to exist or accept a two-party solution to the Middle East situation. This position hurts the chances of easing an eight-month Western economic boycott. In Afghanistan, U.S. military sources say a senior al-Qaeda leader who escaped from prison last year has been recaptured. Senate Democrats have chosen their party leaders. Nevada Senator Harry Reid will be the new majority leader of the 110th Congress. The number two position majority whip will go to Illinois Senator Richard Durbin. Newly elected lawmakers, 40 Democrats and 11 Republicans who will be part of the 110th Congress, are going through freshman orientation at the Capitol today. They are learning about traditions and protocol, as well as emergency safety procedures, such as how to evacuate in case of a biochemical attack. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani has filed papers towards a 2008 presidential run. The moderate Republican was mayor when the September 11th attacks occurred. A top Vatican official is criticizing the U.S.-Mexico border fence as, quote, inhuman. President Bush recently signed legislation to construct 700 miles of security fence along the nearly 2,100-mile U.S.-Mexico border. The South African Parliament approved a civil union bill which recognizes gay marriages. This is a first for the entire continent, where homosexuality is not widely accepted. You are listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A new study of aging found that staying active and trim could help you live until at least age 85. Microsoft founder Bill Gates said the primary and secondary schools in America are failing to prepare students adequately for college. He recommends higher standards, accountability, and innovation. However, he said the U.S. higher education system is the envy of the world. Forbes magazine listed the most dangerous jobs for Americans. They include commercial fishermen, truckers, traveling salesmen, farmers, and ranchers. The CEO CEOs of the big three automakers met with President Bush at the White House today. Among the topics they discussed, the rising costs of health care and commodities such as steel. President Bush leaves for an 8-day trip to Asia later today. It will include his first ever visit to Vietnam, which is hosting the Pacific Rim Economic Summit. The Labor Department reported that wholesale inflation plunged in October due to large declines in the price of gasoline and new cars. Also, for the second month in a row, the Commerce Department reports retail sales fell, also partly due to drops in the price of gasoline. The Oakland A's baseball team announced an agreement with the East Bay City of Fremont. The team will move there and play in a new technologically advanced stadium to be constructed by Cisco Systems. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $58.32 a barrel today. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow in record territory, up 85 points at 12,217. NASDAQ up 24, S&P up 9. There's more at Quality News Network. I'm Allie Drake.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Night Shift, where the children of the night fight the radical right. It's Foxed Up with John Fox. Foxed Up is brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream every day. Be one louder by calling 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-443-2366. And now, your host, the ranting, headbanging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard to another edition of Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. John Fox coming to you from Sydney. It's a bright, sunny day here before a bizarre summer cold front supposed to come through. They're talking about freak hailstorms tonight. What is going on? I've got a bunch of Australian content today. Well, just because it was all screaming at me when I woke up this morning. We got some stuff on Rupert Murdoch. We got some stuff on Eddie Vedder because the boys from Pearl Jam are touring down here at the moment. A few other bips and bobs. And our track of the day today will be something slightly different, and it's all about food. But more on that later. Before we get rolling into things, don't forget you can ring into the program at 1-877-443-2366 or email me, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com and send us your thoughts. Could even read it on the air. But first thing, there was a massive dinner last night that Murdoch threw, and it was all about the American Australian Association. Yes, be scared. Now, Murdoch's all over the mainstream media this week, or this morning, shall I say, due to his comments about growing anti-Americanism in Australia. Now, in the Sydney Morning Herald, they have here Rupert Murdoch's reaction to a poll revealing Australia's negative feelings about the United States was the spark that led to last night's A-list benefit dinner hosted by the American-Australian Association. Mr. Murdoch, chairman and chief executive of News Corporation, who was honored at the dinner as a quintessential American-Australian, verified at last year's Lowy Institute, told only Indonesia, the Middle East, Iran, and Iraq generated fewer positive feelings than the United States. The poll was described as preposterous in the Murdoch press. It found that of the 39% of Australians who felt negatively towards the U.S., almost all thought Australia paid too much attention to Washington's views. Mr. Murdoch asked Malcolm Binks, chairman of the American-Australian Association, and Michael Baum, its patron, what they were going to do about the survey results. The two men then raised the idea of a United States Study Center with the former Minister of Education, Brendan Nelson, and received the enthusiastic backing of Mr. Baum's friend, the Prime Minister, Johnny Howard. Sydney University was announced last night as the host of the center, a joint initiative between the association and the Australian government. Mr. Murdoch commented on the strained relationship between the U.S. and France and said, "None of us want to see America and Australia share the same fate." What is this guy on? And, okay, the quintessential Australian-American, I have a bone to pick with that. How many other people had American immigration law rewritten so he could become an American citizen, so he could own U.S. media? I don't necessarily call this anti-Americanism. I think it's the Australian people being insightful and also being, shall we say, maybe pro-Australian. And I've got a bit of a blog entry regarding this as well, in which I'll get to in a moment. But let's see. Murdoch says here, first and foremost, Australians must resist and reject the facile, reflexive, unthinking anti-Americanism that has gripped much of Europe. Recent surveys have shown such sentiments to be more prevalent than ever, and perhaps even on the rise. Do you think, you know, the Australian people are not dumb. And, you know, John Howard's kind of blind and unshakable alliance with George W. Bush, not necessarily the United States, is becoming a bit of a bone of contention. You know, and it makes complete sense. And by the way, the dinner that this was all that was held last night, guests paid up to $35,000 a table. And this was all to raise money for Australian and U.S. postgraduate scholars to study in both countries. The American-Australian Association, formed in Australia this year, is an affiliate of the 58-year-old U.S.-based Australian-American Association. Mr. Murdoch links to the U.S. Association began when he bought into the U.S. media in 1973, 12 years before he became a naturalized U.S. citizen. His father, Sir Keith Murdoch, was one of its founders. And, you know, old Rupert has no problems in playing in politics. I mean, we know this. You know, when he brought cable television into China, you know, he boasted all about that this was bringing freedom to China. Well, the Chinese then saw the BBC World Channel and said, we don't like that. And Rupert knows where his, you know, bread is buttered, and off went the BBC. So much for all that freedom there, eh? Now, we're coming up on our first break shortly here, and when we come back, we'll do our musical track of the day, something else from one of my favorites, Michael Ferranti and Spearhead. yes, Agnes, cable equals freedom? What's that? Yes, I agree. But when we come back, I'm going to read some stuff from a good friend of mine, Tim Dunlop, who is now blogging for Murdoch, which I find interesting because even when he was approached, one of his first questions was, "Have you read my blog?" And he takes Murdoch on left and right and no holds barred. And if Murdoch wants to throw him a paycheck to counter him, hey, it's a little confusing, but we'll get into Tim's take on this when we get back. So don't forget, you can get on the conversation. This is Conversation Radio at 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Or email me, John, at headonradionetwork.com. Love to get your comments. Love to get your thoughts. We got lots more to get through in this tiny little hour that we have every day. So we'll see you right on the other side of this break on the Head On Radio Network.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the Supreme Court? I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what goes on inside the Beltway, it helps to have a Beltway insider. And I know what's going on in Washington because I used to work there as a congressional attorney. And my sources still give me the inside scoop. So check out the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to naja.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. Naja, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up for a Tuesday afternoon, or Wednesday morning if you're in my part of the planet, here on the Head On Radio Network. And before we went to the break, I was talking about Murdoch's comments last night at a high-dollar dinner about the perceived anti-Americanism rising in Australia. Now, I've mentioned my mate Tim Dunlop, who is the proprietor of RoadToSerfdom.com, which is one of the
one of my favorite blogs out there on the net just because of his writing style. And for the past 2 weeks, he's been working a new gig, actually working for Murdoch. And, you know, he was just as surprised as anybody that he was approached for such a gig, because he's, you know, he's pretty heavy-handed and pretty even-handed when it comes to his opinions. Now, you know, he opens up with the comments, you know, that I read previously, you know, about resisting the facile, reflexive, unthinking anti-Americanism that grips much of Europe. And, you know, Murdoch says, Australian sentiment is thankfully nowhere near Europe's level of hostility, but it could get there and mustn't, Murdoch said. Well, Tim goes on to say, I can't see it myself. I mean, Mr. Murdoch is right when he says that there is antipathy towards the Iraq war and the administration that launched it, but to parlay that into a concern about anti-Americanism is a... And I agree, Tim. The problem is not that people are angry at the Bush administration about the war. The problem is the war, an ill-conceived adventure from the outset that has not only been badly handled in its own right, but has increased the threat of terrorism throughout the world, as 16 U.S. intelligence agencies told us the other day. If I were Murdoch, I would take opposition to the war as a positive sign. I mean, the American people themselves just delivered victory to the Democrats, largely because they objected to the way Mr. Bush has conducted the war and was failing to make any changes to how he was handling the situation. In other words, opposition to the war can be seen as solidarity with the vast majority of American voters rather than any sort of indicator of anti-Americanism. I also think that John Howard's reflexive desire not to challenge Mr. Bush on the issue of Iraq tends to fuel concerns about the U.S.-Australia relationship, and rightly so. People genuinely worry about this blind loyalty on the matter. Again, this is not anti-Americanism, just pro-Australianism. Let's not forget that Mr. Howard told Australia that our involvement in Iraq would be brief and limited to the initial phase. Here he is speaking in 2003. If Australia does go into a war with Iraq, it will be only for a limited time, and there will be no subsequent peacekeeping role, Prime Minister John Howard said in an exclusive interview. Hello, Howard. Great quotes from the past. Feeling a little contradictory? I think so. And with that, we're going to go straight to the phones. We have Timber from North Carolina on the line. How you going, Timber? Welcome to Foxed Up. Timber? Hello? Timber, are you there? Well, I don't hear the caller, so we'll see if we can... Dave, you there? Dave.
Hey.
Hey, man, how are you? There you are. How you doing, mate?
Really great. I don't never get connected that in such a fashion. It went...
that was a little odd, but we get there eventually.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Anyway, I'm curious. Are you of the belief that other parts of the world is still as unhappy with America, even though the election went the way it did? Were they not?
Well, I think that there was a big sigh of relief with we'll wait and see situation is kind of what I think the reaction is at the moment. However, it is bringing real pressure on John Howard over his just blind backing of the war, and he's even gone as far as petitioning George W. Bush to stay the course.
I wonder if he knows, because, I mean, the only way I can connect the dots of why we're there is that it is extremely profitable to this very small upper one-tenth of 1% faction, the Carlyle Group, and it's profitable to the Halliburtons and Bechtels and Kellogg Brown. I can think of no noble purpose whatsoever for us invading Iraq or continuing to occupy it. Yeah, the country's now destabilized pretty severely. I think we have a big part in that happening.
Well, yeah, and you know, the profitability thing worked for Australia for a time, because Australia was the biggest exporter of wheat into Iraq, and it has come to pass that Australia paid over $300 million directly into Saddam's coffers pre-war in extra shipping fees and bribes to get Australian wheat into Iraq. And there's been a thing called the coal inquiry going on here for months, and Howard keeps stonewalling the inquiry from actually being able to look into the government when it seems as though they knew about this the whole time. And I do believe that John Howard is afraid that if the Iraq war does come to an end, there's going to be more spotlight on what we did going in, how we conducted ourselves, and the fact that we very possibly bought $300 million worth of munitions that are firing back on Australian troops. So as far as I can tell, John Howard is guilty under his own anti-terrorism laws of aiding and abetting a terrorist. So, you know, it's very messy, and we're so isolated here that with only, you know, three major media outlets here and a population of just, you know, under 25 million people, it's very easy to keep the dialogue very limited. And it's, I think, the general Australian public's being slow to pick up on how kind of dirty and ugly this whole thing has really been.
Well, when you say that Howard might be guilty of aiding and abetting a terrorist, are you referring to Saddam or W?
Saddam.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and actually both, you know, depending on your point of view. But, you know, it is documented that the Australian Wheat Board, which was originally a government body that became privatized, I think, right before the war, had paid over $300 million directly into Saddam's coffers via, I believe it was a Syrian trucking firm. And these were direct bribes to get Australian wheat in.
I'm thinking that that kind of thing is common practice. Major corporations pay other world corporations and governments to deal with them.
But this was an in direct violation to the Oil for Food program.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Australian Wheat Board was the largest user of the Oil for Food program on the planet. And it seems the only reason that we were getting this stuff in was through these dodgy payments that went, no bones about it, directly to Saddam Hussein himself. At the same time, Howard's talking about what a bad guy Saddam was and why we needed to follow America into this war.
Well, we can't put a whole lot of faith in what they say, can you? And you know what?
No, and see, John Howard's able to set the scope of the investigation. And he's kept the investigation purely on the Australian Wheat Board and has not allowed it to look actually at the government, the foreign minister, what he knew. And the inquiry's been a bit of a farce, but yet the underlying kind of vibe of the whole thing that, you know, Australia was willing to break international law and treaties and lie about it is pretty plain. You know, it's pretty plain, it's pretty clear, and it's really sad, you know, to tell you the truth, because there were shipments of Australian wheat that got sent back once we stopped paying the fees. The Australian farmers, who are dying over here already, lost one of their biggest markets because the new government in Iraq wants nothing to do with them now.
Well, I have to believe that your government and most of the rest of the world knows better than to believe the talking points coming from the White House, that they have to have some ulterior reason for being a party to something as terrible as what's going on in the Middle East right now. Something is being offered to them, probably, I suppose, you know, an awful lot of wealth there. They dumped the whole U.S. Treasury into the few small corporate special interests of this country. They don't seem to care an awful lot about how much harm they do in the process of getting themselves very, very, very rich.
I just think these are small-minded, limited scope individuals that just really think that money is everything, and you know, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess, and you know, Australia, you know, Howard jumps up and down talking about, you know, our support of the Americans, you know, in this war, when we have the smallest contingent in the coalition of the willing. You know, it's about 1,000 guys.
Oh, then
and we're protecting
it.
And we're protecting other contractors. What was that?
There's a few little Eritrea and Borneo and whatnot that I think have a couple dozen troops over there. But.
Yeah, this is true, you know, and trick monkeys from somewhere else. But, you know, it's just a sad state of affairs. And Howard, I put in that club of Blair of just, you know, a big American cheerleader, you know, like, whatever America does is fine, you know.
Well, is he stupid?
And I just, go ahead.
Do you think he's stupid?
John Howard?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I actually think he's one of the smartest politicians I've ever come across. I think he's very cluey. However, he's fallen into the ideology vibe, and you know, he's done some pretty horrific things. You know, lying about boat people throwing their children overboard right before an election when he knew that that wasn't the case. I don't know how familiar you are with what happened with the Tampa, but it was very ugly, and it ended up turning an election on a lie. And he did it again 3 years later when it came to things with the economy. So, you know, the Packers backed Howard in the beginning and always have, and they are the largest media company here in Australia, run Channel 9 and 40 different magazines, and they basically said, Howard's the guy. 10 years ago,
right.
And very little in their newscast has ever strayed away from that. But David, I got to hit the bottom of the hour break, and I really appreciate you ringing in. Always good to hear from you.
Oh, pleasure,
you know, right on, man. And hopefully the world will continue to wake up. So, with that done, we're going to take a break and come back and do our environmental track of the day. We got something from Mr. Michael Ferranti and Spearhead. And you're listening up on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back after a couple of messages.
James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up. And before we go to the track of the day, as Agnes gets that all queued up with software that's driving her crazy at the moment, I just want to cover a couple of things. And this one made me sad. I thought was poignant. And again, Australia should be embarrassed on its stance in the world when it comes to the environment. But as you all know, that there's the UN climate change conference happening at the moment, and Australia has Australia has been put in its place by the head of the UN climate change conference, who has pointedly referred to Canberra's observer status because it won't sign the Kyoto Protocol. Now, they've actually been given the status at the conference of only an observer. Because we've refused to sign Kyoto and are making some sort of noise about there needing to be a new Kyoto, the climate change conference has told Australia that they don't have an active role. They're just an observer. Just watch, boys. And as far as I'm concerned, this should be just, again, embarrassing. The fact that the nation on the planet that has the most sunshine, that could do the most with capturing energy from the sun, is just blowing it and shooting themselves in the foot. And another thing that made me giggle this morning is another touring rock star goes after John Howard. Last week it was Bono demanding that Howard up Australia's foreign aid. Which, you know, as we know, is something that big, that old Bono's been on, is world hunger and some other things. But here in the Sydney Morning Herald, Pearl Jam frontman Eddie Vedder is the latest major overseas rocker to roast Prime Minister John Howard. Midway through the American Quintet's Melbourne show last night, Vedder slammed Howard for blaming the decline of Australian economy on bananas. You know what, he said? John Howard should get his hand off George Bush's banana. And the
comment drew a huge roar from the 12,000 strong sellout crowd. Guys are doing three nights in Melbourne, and then they're up here coming to Sydney, and boy, I wish I knew someone that was on that tour. I'd try and sneak in. But, good on old Eddie Vedder, always speaking his mind. So I want to go to, because we had Dave on the line previously, I want to get to our track of the day, which is not an outwardly environmental track. However, the food we eat and the things we partake are environmental in nature, and it has to do with our health and whatnot. So, you know, if you're like me, and I bet you are, you know, I love food. I just love food, and I love real food, and I happen to have a real penchant for ethnic food, stuff that the tools that you eat the food with are food themselves. One of the things, you know, one of the reasons why I love Mexican food and Indian food, you know, if it's got flatbread, I'm there, baby. And the more chilies, the better. But from the first Spearhead album, Home, just sit back and enjoy this. And this song, one, always makes me hungry and always makes me want to just invite friends over for a big feed. So from the Home album, going back a few years now, this is Spearhead with Red Beans and Rice.
Sexy when it's on the kitchen stove, but
red beans and rice, red beans and rice, red beans and rice.
I could eat a plate twice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
Make everything nice. My fingers like an African soldier. I don't know which fork is for me or for salad. I haven't got a clue when they say, wet your palate. Eat a lot of prunes, it'll keep you loose. Your skin will turn orange if you drink carrot juice. I think beef jerky tastes just like a boot. But when I'm on the street, I chew a liquid soup. And if I have a sore throat, then I eat ginger. And I will break bread with those who are strangers. So come into my cave, tonight I will show you. The food is for life. Life I will show you. If you're having problems, I invite you here. Step into my kitchen, we will cook away your fears. But
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
I can eat a plate twice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
Make everything nice. Toast to the host and hostess. But first
give thanks to God the monsters. Cause if I am a guest, I always wash my plate. I sip a soda while I sing Amazing Grace. Rings on my fingers, left round the tongue. The face full of bubbles, bumping like a wash tub. Sing about my troubles, going down the drain. Drying up the puddles in the back of my brain. But
red beans and rice, red beans and rice, red beans and rice.
I could eat a plate twice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
Make everything nice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
I could eat a plate twice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at
the Head On Radio Network.
Now get back to work.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here for a Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble that we live on, at least for now. I just got an email from a Sydney listener. I'm very, very happy about this. David writes in, and he says, please, John, don't forget to mention those 30,000 that marched in Sydney's Hyde Park in March 2003. We know that Howard took us into this hellhole without our consent, and what he does and what he does in mine and your name is just outrageous. Howard won't admit to anything. He's arrogant. He's never wrong. Will never apologize for anything, and will never accept responsibility. He also snubbed Al Gore. I don't know how he does it, but nothing ever sticks to this guy. And I you're absolutely spot on. When he continues, remember our last election, how Latham, who was the leader of the Labour Party at the time, never mentioned the war and made it interest rates. Unfortunately, Kim Beazley, the current Labour leader, looks like he's a big old sellout too. And I don't think the Labour Party can win. I'm still searching for a viable alternative. Until anti-Americanism isn't the issue, it's anti-American politics.
You're right. We aren't stupid. Look at all the on Cutting Edge every week on SBS and the ABC Correspondent, which are particularly great news magazines. I love the enlightened American people. However, it's sad that maybe they don't get half the information we do. Regards from a fan in Sydney's Inner West and an occasional visitor to the site. Thanks very much, David. And you're absolutely right. In 2003, I was part of that 30,000, and I think that was a low estimate. It was thought that very possibly a 500,000 people turned out on the day nationwide, and I mean that's a statement. That is an absolute statement in a country of, you know, less than 25 million people. Now, and the whole idea that nothing sticks to Howard is right. You know, it's very much that Teflon Ron kind of thing that we can remember from the 80s with Reagan. And yeah, this guy will never admit a failing. He's always right and always has been right. And like I say, I have to give him credit for being a brilliant politician, because he plays all this stuff, you know, just unbelievably well. Now, before we get out of here, I don't know if you all have heard that GE and Hitachi have merged their nuclear arms. And there's some very strange language in the GE press release. I found this at treehugger.com. They say in their latest press release, which can be found on their main website at GE, says, by combining their resources, the new alliance will create an attractive platform for growth and also signal the beginning of a new era for both companies as they continue to position themselves to compete in what many in the nuclear industry are calling a global renaissance for nuclear energy. Boy, aren't we making... It's a renaissance, people! It's not stupidity. It's a renaissance. Now... In the article, they also talk about, they suggest an article at the Pacific Ecologist for the case against nukes. In it, a study by Amory Lovins is quoted, it looks at the cost of nuclear versus improved energy efficiency and found every dollar invested in energy efficiency displaces 6.8 times more carbon than the same investment in nuclear power. Hello? Hello? Bueller? For all the propaganda, it's the only way that I can put it, that we've been having here in Australia from Howard and the rest of them saying that, you know, more reactors is going to be the savior for Australia and the environment, is an absolute joke. And again, you know, it has to be someone's profit motive, because if this is even close to accurate, that, you know, almost seven times more carbon displacement for a dollar invested in renewable energy than in new reactors. And they also mention here, GE is awfully proud of its wind turbines, but as long as they are flogging nukes, we have to keep asking what their real commitment to sustainability is. And that's couldn't put it better myself. You know, what is their real interest? Now, I've just been sent a link from our news ninja, Mr. Gene, in Oregon. And as I bring it up here, he's saying something about a global warming debunker debunked. And I'm just waiting for the slowness of my page to open up. It'll get there. And this is at science.slash.org. And it says, earlier this month, we ran an article linking Christopher Mockton's attempt to discredit global warming. The submitter asked plaintively, can anyone out there go through this piece and tell me why it might be wrong? George Monboit, who I was reading from last week on the 10 points of what we really can do for global warming, has done so. And from his article, it says, "This is a dazzling debunking of climate change science. It is also wildly wrong. In keeping with most of the articles about climate change in the Sunday Telegraph, it is a mixture of cherry-picking, downright misrepresentation, and pseudoscientific gibberish. But it has the virtue of being incomprehensible to anyone who is not an atmospheric physicist. As for James Hansen, he did not tell the U.S. Congress that temperatures would rise by 0.3 degrees Celsius by half century. He presented three possible scenarios to the U.S. Senate, high, medium, and low. Both the high and low scenario were unlikely to materialize. The middle one was the most plausible. As it happens, the middle scenario was almost exactly right. He did not claim under any scenario that sea levels would rise by several feet by 2000. You know, this is the only way that these people can continue to deny the reality of what's happening on this planet, is to cherry pick and to distort. And as they say here, as George says here, downright misrepresentation. You know, the old bait and switch. So, good on George for doing this. And you know, this guy is probably one of the... Oh, shall we say, most restrained about what can be done. However, he knows what can be done and looks for big moves. You know, I still really like his idea of that service stations need to start having interchangeable batteries for electric cars, just like they have, you know, petrol Bowsers. You have batteries. I just, makes an unbelievable amount of sense to me. So anyway, we're coming up on the end of the program, and before we run out of here, I will do some crediting. And as usual, the program today was produced wonderfully by Agnes Kincaid. Thank you, Agnes. You rock. All our streaming via White Rose and Ben Birch. He never sends a bill, so you got to go there and do the right thing. I got to thank the Carpenters as usual, and of course, because they are the biggest supporter of the Head On Radio Network, and everything we do is made possible by those hardworking men and women. And and Peter Godbold at Godbold Computers for keeping the bits going and for rescuing our computer situation last week when all looked very, very shabby. Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions here in Sydney, Australia. Thank you for the music. And thanks to our mods and everybody in the chat room who keep all that running. We couldn't do this without you. This is a great little community that we've built here, and it gets bigger and bigger by the day. And check it out, getting more and more Sydney listeners here. It's just too cool. And don't forget, coming up straight after this program in the news, we have the master Bob Kincaid to take you through 3 hours of conversation radio. And shortly after that, Mr. Bruce Birch, my mate, who's back rejuvenated with a new outlook on life and just absolutely rocking with his program since he's been back. I've just been so enjoying what he's doing, and I know you guys are too. So, I don't know. I have not much left to do today because it's all just too big to go any further. I do really think it's funny that Australia has been kind of given the dunce cap at the UN environmental thingy going on in Kenya. You know, here's your dunce cap, boy. Go sit in the corner and just watch. Just watch. Because you've been nothing but a spectator, so now you can just observe, you bad little boy. I wonder if the United States has been given that same kind of a flick off. But do we even have people at this thing? Because, well, the American government doesn't seem to want to even look at the environment. So, anyway, folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Same Fox time, not on a Fox channel, but on the Head On Radio Network. Stick around for Bob Kincaid. He'll be ready to take you through the evening. And then, of course, the man, Bruce Birch. Peace. Be green. Be good. We'll speak to you tomorrow. You make a grown man cry. Cry. You make a grown man cry. Cry. You make a grown man cry. Cry. Well, the oil, the gasoline, I.
writes, ooh, she's a clean machine.
So I started up.
Well, the start again, all you got.
I can't compete.
The writer's in the other.
Either rough it up. Hey, if you like it, you can slide it up. Come on, slide it up now. Grown man cry. Don't make a grown man cry. Don't make a grown man cry.
My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy. She's a mean machine.
Quality News Network at the top of the hour.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad, up to 130 people, mostly educators, were kidnapped from a government research institute today by armed men wearing police uniforms. Five senior Iraqi officers, including the police brigade commander and police chief, are implicated in the kidnapping and face discipline charges. The organized raid with up to 80 gunmen took place across the highly fortified Green Zone. Elsewhere in Iraq, at least 82 people were killed or found dead today. British Prime Minister Tony Blair spoke with members of the Iraq study group today via video link. The bipartisan group met with President Bush yesterday to discuss how to deal with the situation in Iraq. It will present its findings sometime after Thanksgiving. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe told the Washington Post he will push for a redraft of Japan's pacifist constitution, which went into effect after World War II and placed strong limits on Japan's right to use military force. In Gaza, Hamas indicated the new Palestinian unity government would not recognize Israel's right to exist or accept a two-party solution to the Middle East situation. This position hurts the chances of easing the 8-month Western economic boycott. Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said his country's nuclear program is nearly completed and Iran would soon celebrate. The International Nuclear Watchdog Agency has found traces of highly enriched uranium waste and unexplained plutonium in Iran. The IAEA report confirms that the country continues to enrich uranium in defiance of the United Nations Security Council. 1 week after the midterm elections, Senate Democrats have chosen their new party leaders. Nevada Senator Harry Reid will be the new majority leader of the 110th Congress. The number two position, Majority Whip, will go to Illinois Senator Richard Durbin. The newly elected lawmakers, 40 Democrats and 11 Republicans, who will be part of the new Congress, are going through freshman orientation at the Capitol. They are learning about traditions and protocol, as well as emergency safety procedures. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani has filed papers for a 2008 presidential run.